Thank you, Myron. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. And as Myron said, most of you probably don't know very much. You don't know me. I don't know you. And I look forward to the opportunity to get to know you. But I'll tell you a little bit about myself so we have some common understanding. I just moved to Nebraska this summer, and so prior to that, I lived in Madison, South Dakota. I was the assistant pastor at Living Hope Wesleyan Church since 2017. I have two daughters. Medora is in college in Oklahoma. She's missing us, and we're missing her. My daughter Celia lives with me, and she's in high school, and so last year, in a series of events that fall under the category only God could have done that, I met a man named Roger Sorensen from Creighton, Nebraska. Crazy how our worlds collided, but they did, and we got to know each other, and I'll spare you the cringy details because it would embarrass my daughter, but we fell in love, and we ended up getting married this past summer. But when I met Roger, I had a set of expectations of what I thought a man in my life should be and what he should not be. And Roger did not disappoint as I got to know him, because I was coming in expecting, like, but he didn't disappoint. He met those expectations, and I'm so thankful that God put our lives together, that we were able to merge our lives and begin something new and beautiful, and along with that, God provided me the opportunity to be one of the chaplains at Valley Hope in O'Neill. Serving patients in addiction treatment and recovery. And it's been an incredible blessing to have those conversations and meet with those patients. My relationship with Roger turned out very well, but there's another relationship that I want to tell you about earlier in my life that did not meet the expectations that I had and ended in some pretty significant disappointment for me. It was a guy that I don't even know how long we had actually known each other, but we spent every day together. We had lunch together. We talked about our future plans. We talked about getting married, and like any girl, I was so excited about the prospect of getting married that I had to share it with somebody. And so one day I went up to my kindergarten teacher on the playground to make the big announcement. I said, "We're getting married." And Tom was standing right here. He says, "Oh, no, we're not." That was the end of that relationship. Severe heartbreak to my 5-year-old spirit. We make light of disappointment such as that, but we all face disappointment of one kind or another throughout our lives. And the older I get, the more acquainted, I guess, I get with disappointment. And you would think that the more that I age, I would learn to maybe lower my expectations so I don't have the disappointment. But no, I keep hoping that it's going to be better. This time it's actually going to work out. When we think about disappointment, a basic understanding that I think we can probably work from today is disappointment is when our reality that we experience fails to meet the expectations that we have. And the space in between that is where we feel that disappointment. We feel that on all kinds of scales. You might experience disappointment in a job that you thought was going to be something and satisfy and had these expectations, and it doesn't in reality meet up to that. You might have invested in a friendship or relationship with someone, developed a deep trust, and you had this expectation of what you had and where it was going, and reality brought disappointment. If you've been married for more than a week, you know that marriage is a place of disappointment as well as the beautiful blessing and the joy that it brings, but disappointment is everywhere. It surrounds the idea of children, the hope for having children. Sometimes there's disappointment in not being able to have children. There's disappointment in losing a child. If our child, is born and grows and starts to make decisions, sometimes we have disappointment in the reality that they choose and not meeting the expectations that we have. We face disappointment on a cultural and a societal level. There's racial injustices that are disappointing for us to watch or experience. There's social unrest, political division, economic uncertainty. For those of us within the church, and I've grown up my entire life in the church, and I have faced disappointment within the church as well, both in leadership and as a layperson. When we talk about disappointment today, it's kind of a term I'm using as an umbrella term, but it encompasses any of the experiences that we have that cause us pain, suffering, loss, grief. All of that can kind of fall under the umbrella of disappointment. It's when we find ourselves in a hard place, an unwanted or unexpected circumstance, our dark valley. And a lot of us in those places don't really know what to do with that. It's uncomfortable. Our faith maybe doesn't have the answers that we need in those times. And so we try and find a way around the disappointment or just kind of pretend it's not there. We might think, well, if I can just get over it and then, you know, everything will go back to normal. Or we might try and, you know, get through it unscathed. We might actually get angry and fight back against the disappointment as if we had some kind of control to bring things back into the order, to meet the expectation that we have. We might isolate ourselves because the hurt is so great and so deep. We all respond to different disappointment in different ways. And as much as we don't know what to do with our own disappointment, we know even less about how to help other people in their disappointment. And it just becomes this awkward moment that we experience. What gets really hard for us as Christians is when we face disappointments and we can't reconcile what's happening with our faith. And we have questions about, well, I thought God said this. I thought God asked me to do this. I expected, but this is the reality we find ourselves in. And we have that tension and that crisis in our faith. The Bible fortunately gives us a way of dealing with disappointment. And if we allow ourselves to learn from that, we come out, I think, better and stronger people. And I appreciate, Myron, your attention and the prayer this morning to allow us to acknowledge the pain and the trouble and the hardship that we might be facing. Because we need to acknowledge it. We need to find a way to deal with it. And if you're taking notes this morning, kind of the thought that's going to anchor all of this together is that God's presence fills the gap between the places of pain in our life and the promises of his goodness, what he promises that we can expect. And our reality doesn't match that. We have this place of pain. God's presence can fill that gap. We need to acknowledge that both the place of pain and the promises of God are real. We can't diminish the place of pain that we're in. We can't minimize it. We can't deny it. We have to acknowledge that it's real, and we also have to acknowledge that God's promises are real. As Christians, we have the benefit of being able to hold both of those together. The hard part is that it's hard to hold them at the same time, because our pain sometimes wants to tell us that it wants us to doubt God's promises. There's this underlying thought that I don't know that any Christian necessarily preaches or proclaims this intentionally, but there's this idea that as Christians, we're supposed to be happy. We're supposed to have faith. We're supposed to be able to get through it. And so, you know, we can't express the hurt. We can't feel defeated. And so sometimes we try and spiritualize our experience, and we say things like, well, yeah, it's a little hard right now, but God's gonna take care of it. And I'm not denying that God will take care of it. That is absolutely true. That is something that we can expect and we can count on. But if we don't actually believe that and we're just saying that in order to minimize our pain and trying to act like our pain doesn't matter, we're not saying that from a place of faith. But it might be fake if it's not truly matching up. We don't have to be fake people and pretend it doesn't hurt in order to have faith. They can go, they can live together. We can experience them at the same time. We also don't want to go to the other side where we focus so much on the pain and get so caught up in that that we forget God's promises or deny or turn away from them. We need to be able to hold them both. And the Bible gives us a way to voice, the Bible allows us to give voice to our pain and at the same time acknowledge and welcome the presence of God. And it's a process called lament. We find lament throughout the Bible in a number of places, particularly in the Psalms. And there are 150 Psalms, and at least a third of them fall under the category of lament. The Psalms are an incredible book that just gives voice to the human emotion. It's not just the narrative side that we read, not just the historical accounts. It's not the prophecy, but it's really it gives voice to the things that we feel and experience. There are other places in Scripture that do the same thing. The book of Job, if you've read through that, Job lamented. Job gives voice to our pain. It allows us to identify. Jonah lamented when he was in the belly of a whale or a big fish, whatever we want to call it. He had pain and he had suffering. And as we hear his prayer and his lament, it allows us to identify with that. It gives voice to the pain, and he recognized his pain and the presence of God at the same time. Jesus entered our world. He entered this place of pain, of suffering, and he experienced on the cross the ultimate pain and suffering. And he lamented in that moment. He acknowledged the pain, not just the physical pain, but his spiritual pain. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? He recognized and helps give voice to our pain. We prefer, it feels better to focus on the celebration and the triumph and, you know, the Psalms that give praise to God and where we can claim his promises. We need both. We need the balance of the praise and the promise, and we need the lament and the process of working with the pain and disappointment. Lament is not the opposite of praise. Lament is actually the pathway to praise. So this morning I want to talk a little bit about kind of two major ideas. One is just understanding where pain, like the pain and disappointment, and kind of the spiritual, you know, we understand the human side of that, but where does pain and disappointment come from? And then talk about a little bit, what does lament, how can we have courage to work through that process using lament so that we can experience God's presence filling that gap between the places of pain and the promises of his goodness. We're going to start this morning in Psalm 23. This is a familiar psalm. You've probably heard it, perhaps maybe heard it at a funeral. Maybe you had to memorize it as a child. The Lord is my shepherd, something that probably can roll off of our tongues fairly easily. But let's start with verses 1 through 3. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. He lets me rest in green meadows. He leads me beside peaceful streams. He renews my strength. He guides me along right paths, bringing honor to his name. Take a minute to paint this picture in your mind. The Lord, in his presence, is right with us. He's a shepherd. He's giving us everything that we need. We lack nothing. We have peaceful, lush, green meadows that we can rest in. We have the streams. It's sunny in my head when I see that picture. We have strength. We're never weary. He guides me along right paths. We never have to question which is the right way to go because he's going to guide us, and we know that it's going to honor him. When I think about that picture of Psalm 1, it reminds me of the very beginning of time in the Garden of Eden. Pastor RJ has been talking to you in the last several weeks about the story of God, and he's made reference to this very beginning of creation where we began this life in the Garden of Eden. I'll quickly remind you what happened in that space, what that was like. And as I read from Genesis chapter 1, 27 to 31, compare in your mind how that looks and feels to you to what we just read in Psalm chapter 23. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And then God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground." And then God said, "Look, I've given you every seed-bearing plant throughout the earth and all the fruit trees for your food. And I've given every green plant as food for all the wild animals, the birds in the sky, and the small animals that scurry along the ground, everything that has life." And that is what happened. And then God looked over all he had made, and he saw that it was very good. He gave them everything they needed. His presence was with them. The Lord, he was their shepherd. They had all that they needed. They had these beautiful meadows and these peaceful streams. He renewed their strength. He guided them along right paths. They knew exactly what they were supposed to do. They were living in this perfect place in the presence of God. They were created in the image of God. And as Pastor RJ has said in the story of God, we were created in the image of God so that we would reflect the image of God. We were created to enjoy the presence of God. And that is exactly what was happening in that first part of Genesis. It's what we were created for. And the image of God that's imprinted on you and on me longs for that. It's what we're hungry for. It's what we expect, because we're supposed to expect that. When I go back to Psalm 23, that first part of Psalm 23 gives me that vision of the beginning. The end of Psalm 23 actually gives me a vision of the end of eternity. As we read this from the end, Psalm 23 verses 5 and 6, picture this scene in your mind. "You prepare a feast for me in the presence of my enemies. You honor me by anointing my head with oil. My cup overflows with blessings. Surely your goodness and unfailing love will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will live in the house of the Lord forever." We just sang a song this morning that paints the scene of Revelation, when we will be in the presence of God again. We will enjoy his presence. We will experience that perfection where there will be no pain. We will overflow with blessing. The goodness and unfailing love of God our Father will be with us all the days of our life. We will live in the house of the Lord forever. We know what that looks like. We're going to flip to the other end of the Bible in Revelation 21 and find this comparison. "I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, 'Look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them, and they will be his people. God himself will be with them.' There is no doubt that we will again enjoy the presence of God, and it will be perfect. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever." Both in the beginning and in the eternal end, God's presence is seen and his perfection and promises are felt. They are tangible. They are real. But we skipped a verse in Psalm 23. Verse 4 says, "Even when I walk through the darkest valley, I will not be afraid. For you are close beside me. Your rod and your staff protect and comfort me." Verse 4 of Psalm 23 is bookended by two places of beauty and light and peace and promise. And in verse 4, we have a description of this life that we're living now between these two gardens. It's described as a dark valley. There's a feeling of heaviness, even death. And there are certainly moments in this temporary middle space where we live, there are moments of joy and beauty and light and freedom and peace. But there's also the reality that it's marked by disappointment and by pain. And we need to say, as the psalmist did, that even there, even when I walk through this valley, this dark valley, I won't be afraid because you are with me. God's presence fills the gap in the places of pain. It's easy when we read verse 4, we read this in a matter of seconds. But in reality, the dark valley in our lives can last weeks, months, years. We might go through several dark valleys in this middle space where we live. So let's not minimize that location. There are parts of this valley that might be green and lush, parts where we might be able to see the sunlight sparkling through the canopy of trees. We might have a river running between the mountains, but this particular experience is one of those dark places in the valley, the metaphor of death and heaviness. And notice that it says, your rod and staff, what do? They protect and comfort. The fact that protection and comfort is needed would imply that clearly danger is present in this place. And we don't want to walk through this valley unprotected and uncomforted. We'd rather hang out in the green meadows and the peaceful streams of the beginning of Psalm 23, or we'd rather just think and skip ahead and just wait to bide our time until we can get back to the end where we spend all of the days of our life in the house of the Lord. But there it is, verse 4, smack in the middle of these two gardens. What does that valley, that dark valley, look like for you right now? Are you dealing with an uncertain business? Maybe you're spending night after night in a lonely home. Maybe you're going through your school days with surrounded by people, but not really feeling like you have friends that know your soul and you feel abandoned. When we face that disappointment and feeling of abandonment, our soul wants to ask, where is God? Where are his promises? Why isn't he living up to my expectations and giving me what he promised me? We remember the simpler, better days when it wasn't so hard, or we cling to the promises of what it will be like, and we don't want to wrestle with the tension of disappointment. I think there's another passage in the New Testament that provides another understanding to this middle space where we live, this temporary middle space, this valley between two gardens. Romans chapter 8, I think, gives voice to our experience here. Starting in verse 18, it says, yet what we suffer now in this dark valley is nothing compared to the glory that he will reveal to us later. For all creation is waiting eagerly for that future day when God will reveal who his children really are. This is what we were created for. We long for it. Because against its will, all creation was subjected to God's curse. Remember that from back in the garden? There was this beauty and perfection and presence of God. And then Adam and Eve were presented with an opportunity to make a choice. And they made a choice that introduced sin, introduced pain, introduced suffering and turmoil. And everything in the world since that moment has been in a gradual state of decay. all creation was subjected to that. But with eager hope, it goes on to say in verse 21, the creation looks forward to the day when it will join God's children in glorious freedom from death and decay. There will be an end to this process of death and decay. For we know that all creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. And we believers also groan. Even though we have the Holy Spirit within us, we have the presence of God in this place of pain as a foretaste of future glory. We long for our bodies to be released from sin and suffering. We too wait with eager hope for the day when God will give us our full rights as his adopted children, including the new bodies he has promised us. We face disappointment in this life because we were created for something more. And the image of God imprinted on us knows this and longs for this. We were created to expect and experience the perfection of heaven and the presence of God. And our current reality, because of the curse, is far from that. And so as Christians, we should actually expect to be disappointed. We should expect to groan, as in the pains of childbirth. Childbirth is a process not everyone in this room has gone through. Some of you have been witness to it. Everyone is the result of it. And we know that the pains of childbirth lead to something amazing. And due to modern medicine, I have not had to experience that intensity of groaning that some of you may have. Epidurals are amazing. Some of you might have had kidney stones, and they say that's the next best thing to a child, to giving birth, right? If you've had a kidney stone, just you're right up there. I've actually experienced both at the same time. So let's just, kidney stones and giving birth doesn't make for a pleasant combination. So I'm owning my right to groan because this doesn't feel right. It's not supposed to feel like this. And it's not. This life that we're living on this earth isn't supposed to feel like this. And that's why we feel the disappointment. The disappointment then has the potential to show us our need for God. It reminds us that we were made to enjoy his presence. We long for him. We don't have to run from that disappointment and from that pain. We can learn to trust that even there, even though we're walking through a dark valley, we don't have to be afraid because he is with us. We might not feel that as we're in that groaning, like when you're in that delivery room and laying on that bed groaning before that child is born, you're not asking or thinking, oh, it's going to be so wonderful to hold this baby. Like, you are feeling the intensity of that pain and you're asking, why do we have to go through this? When we ask that in life, let me encourage you that you're asking, where is God in this pain? He is in you, the one feeling the pain. He is not in it, the thing or the person who's causing the pain. And when we can have that change of mind, then we can understand that God's presence fills the gap in the places of pain as we wait for his promises of his goodness. I think the idea of groaning gives us a taste of what that lament looks like. There are four parts to lament. I don't think they necessarily happen in any particular order. I think there are these are modeled for us in the Psalms. But we can learn to practice these steps and experience the presence of God when we're in the places of pain. Now, earlier, Myron gave you the assignment of reading Psalm 104. I'm going to give you, if you're taking notes and want some homework, as we talk about these parts of lament, I'm going to let you find this for yourselves as you read through the Psalms. So I'll give you a few that are examples. Psalm 10, Psalm 13, 70, Psalm 71, and Psalm 77. You will find the pattern of lament in those Psalms. And you can use those to model your own prayer of lament. The first part I want to talk about in lament is the part where we turn. We have to turn to God in the place of pain. When we feel the pain, we can turn all kinds of different directions. We can turn away from God. We can turn to a substitute for comfort and for truth. We can turn to God in the place of pain. And so our lament begins by turning to God in prayer. We acknowledge God. We come into his presence to voice our pain. Not to put on our big girl pants and say, God, I'm here today. Don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just going to, whatever. Like, we can voice our pain. We turn to God with that. When we're in that place of pain, our lament becomes a prayer of faith that points us to God. It doesn't make us a weaker Christian. It doesn't mean that we can't handle it. It becomes a prayer of faith when we turn to God. The second part of lament is complaint. Now, this is not the complaining of your teenage child when they don't like what you made for supper. It's not coming to God saying, I don't like this. Can I have something else? The complaint that we see modeled throughout the Bible is when we clearly and bluntly just lay out the reasons for the pain and the sorrow. We just spell out what has happened and how it makes us feel. It can be done in a healthy way as we acknowledge the hurt that we feel. Not in a self-pity, poor me kind of thing, but lament, the complaint part of lament is if we're going to love God with all of our heart, that means that we love him through the honest cries of our hurting heart. It's not just the happy place of our heart. We can come to God with the hurt that's in our heart. The third thing that you'll see in the Psalms of Lament is the ask. We turn to God, we file a complaint, express a complaint, and we ask. We make a request for God to act, to do something. And this isn't from a place where we're demanding something from God. We can come boldly to ask God to meet us in our pain and to do something in our place of pain. But we don't come boldly to demand the promises of God. We come boldly because we want to depend on the God who gives the promise. Our boldness comes from who God is and that we can depend on him. The last part of lament is trust. Every lament ends with the statement of trust and praise. All of these components are present. We're expressing the pain, we're acknowledging the pain, we're coming to God with the pain, we're asking him to do something. But trust is when we continue to pursue the presence of God, even when the promises of God don't make sense in the places of pain. It's not just a fake it till you make it, but it's trusting. God, I'm hanging on to what you say is true. Pain in our lives of any kind tells us that something needs attention. Physical pain tells us that something needs attention. The emotional and spiritual pain is no different. If we ignore our physical pain or we minimize our physical pain, we put our health, maybe our lives, in danger. And we treat our physical pain, you can see the same steps of lament in how we treat our physical pain. We turn. We go to someone who we know can help us, right? I was attacked a couple weeks ago by a rooster in our yard. I had to go to the doctor because I needed some attention. The pain told me that something needed attention. I could have just dealt with it on my own, ignored it, whatever, but I turned to someone who had the capacity to help. When we deal with our physical pain, we complain in the sense we have to tell what happened and how we feel about it. I had to tell the doctor what happened. I had to explain it. I had to describe my pain, my fear of what would happen. And then I had to ask for help. Not to demand, like, you better fix this for me. But my asking was because I was depending on the person that I knew could help me. And then we have to trust. They gave me some red pills. I had to trust that if I took those, it was going to help. The same process applies in lament. So if you find yourself in a place of pain, spiritual, emotional pain, don't ignore it. And don't let your disappointment turn you away from God or tempt you to hide from Him or doubt Him. In my work at Valley Hope, I work with a number of patients that came to a place in their life where they experienced trauma, pain, loss, disappointment. And instead of turning to God, they distanced themselves from God because they didn't understand that His promises could really help them in their place of pain. And so they turned away and instead turned to addictive behaviors. Turning to God in our place of pain is knowing that we were created for something more. We know that this reality and the pain that we're experiencing isn't close, even close to what God created us for. And we know that our heart is groaning for the presence of God to be with us in that. As you think about your valley, you're even there from Psalm 23:4, even in the dark valley, I won't be afraid. What is your place? What is your valley? Can you name it? Can you talk about what has happened and how you're feeling about it? Can you engage God's presence in that place? And then pray that verse back to God. Even there, you are with me. Even here, God, your presence fills the place, the gap between the place of pain and the promises of your goodness. If you're not currently in a place of pain, you've either just come out of one or you're about to go into one. But if you're not there, then let me remind you that while it's true that God's presence fills the gap between the places of pain and the promises of His goodness, His presence also fills you and me. And so it's possible that God might be asking you to carry His presence and for you to stand in the gap with somebody else who's in a place of pain and needs to know God's presence. I promise you it will be uncomfortable. I promise you there'll be times when you don't know what to say. Just let the presence of God be in that space. Live your life in a way that reflects the image of God. The words that Pastor RJ ended his sermon with last week, he said, "The world desperately needs you to look like Jesus." Because we need this reminder. In this space where life, our reality is not what it's supposed to be, people need to be reminded that we're made for something more, that there's something better. And we have Jesus within us, the Holy Spirit, to be that presence of God. In this space where we live, where all of creation and every human being is groaning, whether they're aware of it or not, we're groaning for the fulfillment of what we were created for. It's the space where the pain, the disappointment, the darkness is real. The world desperately needs to experience the presence of God through you and me. We need to show up for people and stand in the gap. When we walk through the dark valley with the presence of God, it leads to a place of mercy and hope. It gives that, we experience that as we work through the process of lament, inviting God into that, but we can also stand in the gap with someone else and allow the presence of God to fill the gap for them between their place of pain and the promise of His goodness. And hopefully by the grace of God, that will cause them to want to turn to God and begin their own process of lament.